Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. I'm Melody Bradford, your host. Welcome back to Trailblazers. I'm your host, Melody Bradford, and I'm so excited to introduce today's guest. She changed the way the world puts on makeup, not with a brush, not with a sponge on a stick, but with a hot pink teardrop that became a global phenomenon. From doing makeup on Hollywood sets to creating an entirely new category in beauty, Rhianne Silva, founder and CEO of Redeeming Beauty and the creator of the original Beauty Blender, didn't just disrupt the industry, she rewrote the rules. Her invention, had sold by the millions, is used by celebrities, pros, and everyday beauty lovers around the world, and has sparked an entire movement in beauty innovation. And while her roots are in Los Angeles, she chose to build and grow her company right here in the Lehigh Valley. Today, we're going behind the scenes of the Beauty Blender Empire, the breakthroughs, the prototypes, the growing pains, the sacrifices, motherhood, mentorship, legacy, and what's still coming next from one of the most successful Latina entrepreneurs of our time and maybe all time. Rhianne, welcome to Trailblazers.
Ooh, I'm tired already. Thank you.
You should be. You've made quite the innovation here. Can you take us back a moment and just share with us how you came up with the idea for Beauty Blender, how that was born, and what problem you were trying to solve at the time, and what made you believe you could create something totally new?
So I created Beauty Blender out of a need. As a makeup artist, I work on set, and sometimes we just have to MacGyver things in real time to fix challenges that we have on set. And that is really at the fundamental base of everything. That is what happened with Beauty Blender. I had a challenge because Beauty Blender was being used on the very first show broadcast and created and filmed in high definition, which, by the way, makes Beauty Blender the first high definition tool. And I was hired on this specific show, Girlfriends, because I was a makeup artist that knew how to airbrush beauty makeup. And although that sounds very technical and very
sophisticated,
different from, you know, classically trained makeup artists, the problem was airbrushers are loud. And just like sitting here today, if there were any external noises, it would bother the sound people and the editing and all that kind of stuff. So airbrushing was not practical, but it was a really great technique for seamless application of makeup. And I had taken this ongoing course. I'm a proud member of Local 706, the union, makeup union.
Wow.
And we do ongoing education with award-winning, Academy Award-winning makeup artists. And I went to this seminar that this makeup artist, Kelsey Fry, was doing because she had just won a couple Academy Awards and was sharing some of her secrets. And it was at that seminar that it kind of sparked my idea of, like, wow, I could probably create a tool out of a sponge and use it in the way that she described and figure out a way to not have to take my actors off of set. So that was really, like, the way it started. I never thought it would be a consumer product. I thought, you know, at best, I could figure out how to manufacture this product if it worked. And, you know, get a little supplemental income. My kid was going to private school, which is very expensive in California. I was still in California at the time. But really, that was the beginning. That was how it started. And here we are today.
That's incredible. So did you go through multiple versions and prototypes before landing on the final Beauty Blender shape and texture? And what did that process really look like behind the scenes?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, first off, let me say that whenever somebody says, oh, I wish I had this or I wish I had that, that generally states that your overall consciousness doesn't believe that that thing exists. So I, at the time, didn't realize it, but I was creating a category and there was no manufacturing. There was no machinery that was making this type of tool. The product was very soft, and when you tried to grind it and shape it, it would just get caught in the machines. And so I had to figure out a way to make Beauty Blender. And that brought me to the Lehigh Valley.
I actually know this story because, you know.
Of course you do. Melody and I are friends.
But tell me, I mean, how did you find Bethlehem? How did you find Catherine? I mean, talk to us a little bit about that.
Right. So I was a very, very popular makeup artist. I was very busy at the time. Not only was I doing Girlfriends, I was doing Moesha and the Hughleys. I was working with Brandy and Eve and Whitney and all these different musical artists. And when I wasn't on set with my TV shows, I was doing personal appearances with them, press junkets, traveling around the world for openings of movies and that, albums and that kind of stuff. And I knew in my mind that I needed to figure out how to make this tool, because at this point I had realized by cutting the edges off of these triangular sponges and making them into teardrop shapes, getting them wet, doing all the things that I learned in that seminar. At this point, I realized, hey, I can't be hand-cutting these sponges. I need to figure out how to manufacture them. So when I would go on these different trips with my clients, I would go to different stores that sold beauty sponges, and I would look on the back of those sponges, because, girl, this was before Google. This was before, I mean, literally you would have to dial 411 and try to find, you know, a listing or a phone number so that you could actually cold call whoever it was you're looking for. So I would go and I would look at these bags and try to see who was distributing and making these products. And after doing that for about a year, because I was, you know, me and my crew were sitting and cutting these sponges on the side of the set or in our trailers on the back lot of Paramount. Wow. After about a year, I identified that there were really only two manufacturers left in the United States that actually made this kind of material. And one of them happened to be right here in the Lehigh Valley in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So I called my little 800 number, cold called this company, talked to the woman who answered the phone. I said, hey, look, I'm looking for somebody in product development. I have an idea that I want to talk to her about. And she was like, you know, kind of like with that tone of voice, like, you're a little crazy. I'm not sure who to connect you to. So she asked me, well, you know, what is it that you're trying to make? And I said, look, I'm a makeup artist. I'm in LA. I work in Hollywood, California. And I have an idea, and I think somebody at your company could help me. And she, I could hear her mind thinking, like, who should I connect her with? She did connect me to Catherine Bailey, who is, I call her my makeup mama. She's still with me 22, 23 years after the fact. But it was then that she connected me with Kathy, and the rest is kind of Beauty Blender history. We created a category.
And so you created this prototype, and you got, you know, you found a manufacturer, and you aligned with somebody that could kind of help you bring it to life from a manufacturing perspective. When you first launched, though, when it was, you know, and let me just say,
there, you want to know about the process?
Well, I want to definitely make sure that listeners understand that there is the original Beauty Blender, and then there are
the fans.
Exactly. Thank you for saying that. With a capital F, right?
The fans,
an F word. No, because there's a technology there that sets you apart, and you really have to use both to really understand what that is and the effect that it kind of gives you on your face. But
there's a difference.
There is.
Let me walk you through that.
Don't give up any trade secrets. No, but, you know, when you first launched, was there a moment that you thought this is going to change everything?
I had no idea.
No idea.
I really thought that I was making a product that other makeup artists were going to need, because we were moving into the digital world, which is so crazy now because everything is digital, right? Yeah. But at the time, if you think about it, technology was just starting to understand how to digitize everything, right? So we went from shooting film and setting up lights in a certain way, because film reacts different to lights than videotape does, and technology was not growing in makeup artistry at the same speed. So this is how Beauty Blender was born. But it was through the process of meeting Kathy and her just unicorn experience. I mean, because if you think about it, like, who do you call to make a makeup sponge, and who has like that very kind of distinct scientific background that can determine different substrates of polyurethane, you know, and for me as a makeup artist, that you might as well be speaking a different language.
Right.
I had no idea. So she was very, very, very key and helpful in bringing this idea I had to life. And she believed in me. You know, I had gone to a couple other, well, there weren't that many, but I had gone to, you know, the other people that could possibly help me, and they just kind of looked at me and said, sorry, we can't really help you. You're crazy. But Kathy listened, and she, you know, she, I remember her telling me, it was like the palm slap to her forehead, like, wow, why haven't we thought about this? Mm-hmm. And I told her, because you're not a makeup artist working in the trenches of Hollywood. You know, you guys have packaging engineers that figure out how to put a sponge applicator in a compact or in a box, but never really designing a product to put makeup on your face in a very meaningful way.
Mm-hmm. So here you are.
Such
right?
a simple idea, but still so complicated, right?
I mean, 100%. But you're in the early days of Redeeming Beauty. What was that like? And who were the first believers? I mean, obviously you said Kathy, but who thought you were completely out of your mind? Did you face any challenges in trying to kind of like launch this product, launch this company, and turn it into what it is today?
I can tell you overwhelmingly who thought I was out of my mind. Every suit, every man, every corporate guy that I tried to explain my product to and why I needed funding looked at me like, oh, sweetheart, this is kind of crazy. You know what? Let me talk to my daughter. Let me talk to my wife. You know, like, they didn't really understand the innovation. They weren't considering technology. They didn't understand the scope and how big, you know, being the first could be.
Yeah. So today, beauty blenders sell globally. I've seen figures like...
No offense to men, by the way. I love men, but that's just the God's honest truth.
Oh, they don't use it. Although, I have to say, and
there's a lot of men that use it, I'm just saying.
There are, yes.
And it may not because they wear makeup. I recognize that we are living in a time now where men care about their skin, mm-hmm. you know, and the care of their skin.
But today, beauty blenders sell globally. I've seen figures like 4 per minute. Is that accurate? And when you hear that number, how does that land for you? Like, are you like, wow, that's like incredible, you know?
Well, first of all, I need to know where you got that statistic because it's actually 17 a minute.
Okay.
The last time we checked.
Okay.
And, you know, I think my marketing team did an analysis of, you know, our sell-in, our sell-through, and you know, the demand planning and the rates, and came up with some sort of calculation that way. And we've also, you know, Beauty Blender has won so many awards. I say that humbly, but it's true. And those people that determine your award worthy a lot of times do the analysis as well to make their determination.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, the company has evolved over time. You guys have gone through various campaigns. I mean, you've launched a color line. What have you learned throughout that entire process as far as, you know, the company evolving and growing and pivoting and what have you? What have you learned about that whole process of kind of bringing different things to light, but also kind of staying to your core?
I think we're going to need several of these sessions to go through everything that I've learned. I mean, look, I'm a makeup artist. I'm a creative. I'm not a business person. So I can tell you that there have been lessons every step along the way. You know, failure is a great teacher, and I've made a lot of mistakes. I've wasted a lot of time and money, but I've learned a lot. I would say that one of the biggest things I've learned is that if you have an idea that you think you want to invest your life and your time into, you have to make sure that your passion continues to measure the dream.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very easy in business to be discouraged by people that don't align with your vision.
Mm-hmm.
So you're the one that has to keep the passion and the vision alive. And I say that, you know, in every aspect of business. I say that from the inception of an idea to the building of a team, you know, to your organization, your operational team, being inspirational and making sure everybody is still aligned to your goal is probably the biggest lesson I've learned, because it's very easy to become distracted when you're growing a business, because it gets exciting mm-hmm. and all kinds of things happen and you hire people to manage certain aspects, every aspect of your business. And so you hire smart and you believe those people are doing their jobs. But what I've learned as a leader is that I still have to dip my finger in every pool in mm-hmm. the business and keep people inspired and make sure they're aligned to the goal.
Yeah, you know, that's good advice for leaders, but especially, I mean, and, you know, you've won countless awards, like you said, but you're a Latina woman. Let's talk about being a woman leader.
Well, yes, happy Hispanic Heritage Month.
Yes.
We're doing this in my month. I'm so excited.
But as a Latina woman leading a global beauty brand, what has that experience been like, both the challenges and the power in it?
That's interesting, because when you look at that as from a global perspective, being Latina is not as unique, let's say, mm-hmm. globally, as it is to be a female founder here in the U.S. I think here in the U.S., there's a little more stigma attached to being ethnic. I think that in some ways it's helped me. In other ways, it's probably slowed things down, although it never happens in my face. Like, it doesn't happen in real time. No one ever says, hey, because you're Latina and you're a woman, I'm
right.
not going to help you. That never happens. Everybody's very polite, for the most part. But I think overall, I think, you know, the confidence that, you know, bankers and investors and other executives and people in charge might have with a little Mexican girl without a business degree is a little different, but a good idea is a little different than maybe a founder that, you know, went to the Wharton School of Business. I mean, there's just those different mindsets and kind of considerations that are always going to be there. So again, it really falls back on your passion and your vision. And for me, it was my ability to look at a no as just, that's just not my person. It's the wrong person. So you just keep going.
Has anything, I mean, so you said you learned a lot along the way, but particularly from your leadership style perspective, has it evolved as the company has scaled from an idea to an empire? Like, what are the key takeaways that you're like, you know, if I had to share this advice with an entrepreneur seeking to do the same thing, what would you tell your younger self? What would you tell that woman starting out in business?
It sounds really cliche, because when I hear that question being asked in other interviews or different situations, you know, I always hear women in my position always say, I would tell that younger person that you're enough. But it's really true, because mm-hmm. you have to be brave, and you have to, again, I use the word, be passionate about your idea and be willing to stick your neck out on the line and look ridiculous, or not look as seasoned, if you will, as maybe someone else. And understand that that's okay, because all of it is the sum of what you're going to become down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a part of the journey. I would tell my younger self, you know, don't be intimidated by the spreadsheets and the P&L and all of the things that you don't really understand, because the people that you're dealing with don't understand what you do. So there's a balance that exists that sometimes you don't always know about. You don't feel is there.
Like, and can compliment.
Like, I have something to bring to the table, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of times you sit in these meetings, especially early on, not super early on. There was like this mid place in the growth of Beauty Blender where things were moving very fast and the business was growing very fast. And so we were bringing in a lot of really smart people, and the conversations would just go way over my head. You know, I was like, I needed a translator. But I learned it, you know. I feel like I got my business education in real life, in real time.
Let me just shift gears here for a second. Challenges and triumphs. What has been the hardest season of building this company, and how have you gotten through it? or how are you getting through it?
Well, there's
although
been
it seems like it's perfect now. So.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, there's, you know, there's always growing pains, right? So there's been pain along the way, but it's overcoming the challenges and then getting to the next stage of growth. I would say the last couple years have been really interesting because, you know, domestically here and globally too, we're at a place in our humanity and in our evolution where certain things are happening that have just undeniably changed, you know, consumerism overall. I mean, we can always talk about economics and how, you know, people feel economically stressed. I mean, a certain segment. I mean, there's people that are just so uber wealthy, they have, you know, no concerns about anything. There's such a big gap in the middle now. But, you know, so there's always the economic influences that as a business person, you know, you ride the waves of and you see that. But something really interesting that's happened in the last couple years is the acceptance socially and almost the celebration of dupes. And what I mean by dupes are, you know, when you have an original product like a beauty blender, which is the first in its category, and you know, that's something that we talk a lot about. And, you know, again, like, how do you prove that? Well, because Beauty Blender is in the Smithsonian of American History, Museum of American History, for being, and I am, for being somebody that created a product that actually changed a whole industry. So when you have that kind of positioning, it gives me the ability to say this with confidence, that we came to a place in our culture where, because economically and because of social media, we all, not we all, but a lot of people want to live their best life that they see on social media, and they see the celebrities and how they live, and it's an unattainable dream, right? Everybody in social media is putting their best life out there. They're not showing you the ugly underbelly of their life. They're trying to make it aspirational. They want you to idolize them or emulate them. So when people can't go and get luxury products and pay a high premium for those prices, it creates a market for a down market for knockoffs and copies because they're affordable. And before, it used to be shameful. Like, you would never want to admit, oh, this is not a Gucci, it's a Lucci, or, you know, something like that, you know. But, you know, when you start seeing whole segments on national morning TV shows about why it's smarter to buy this thing that looks like this thing for half the price, you know, there's a cultural switch that's happened. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, at Beauty Blender, I created, we're talking just about a crazy little product, right? A little piece of sponge. But it is the prestige product in that market because it created the category. So when I created my pricing, that means all the down products are going to be cheaper. Mm-hmm. And so we live in this land of dupes now where people don't understand the difference. They think it looks the same, so it must be the same. Unless someone calls you out, no one's going to know. And then when they do, you have TV telling you, oh, it's the smart choice. You know, watch your pocketbook because everybody's struggling now. So this in the last couple of years has really been a challenge. But, you know, Melody, I love a challenge. So I have found ways with my team to create points of difference along the way. And really, you know, one of the things that I learned in marketing very, very early on, because I would sit on set and I would read books when I was coming up with the idea of Beauty Blender. I read this one book called, it's an old book now, but it was really impactful for me. It was called The 22 Immutable Laws of Branding. And what I learned in that book is that, you know, if you create a category, you cannot exist in the category by yourself. You need competition because that's how you create longevity and that's how you bring attention back to your brand. That's why Coke has Pepsi. It's like you create a competition between you and who is in your category, and that keeps you relevant because it gives you conversation to keep talking and to keep, you know, educating the consumer about why you're better. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do now.
You know, and so Beauty Blender is, and you are, the OG, you know, the GOAT. But it's also, I mean, it's at a price point that's obtainable, right?
It's affordable luxury.
It is. It's often
unless you go to Amazon or Alibaba and you see knockoffs and copycats that you don't know where they're made and you don't know what they're made of, but they look in a photo on your computer.
Often imitated,
just like
never
beauty,
duplicated.
Like Beauty Blender, you'll right. get like, and they'll even like, I have to police the internet and scour it constantly. Well, I don't, but I have companies that do, you know, to be taking down these imposters, right? That use my trademarked IP and say, oh, this is a Beauty Blender, and it's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, and so it's one of those things that like, Kleenex or Xerox or these brands that kind of are the original, like you said, you created a category that, you know, has really kind of set you apart and set the standard. So it's interesting to hear your take on how that's evolved over time and how you face those challenges. What advice would you give to women? You had said you're enough, but if they have a concept or a dream or a vision that they're trying to bring to life and maybe there's some hesitancy, surely they're enough, but what would you say to help empower them to take that next step and pursue their dream? Because this was a bold step.
Yeah, I think it's really important to find your people. You know, not everybody's going to understand what it is you're trying to do. Be very clear in the way that you are pitching your idea. That's first and foremost. You know, keeping things very clear and simple and easy to understand is really super important, especially if you're pitching something that's unique, if it's something original. But I feel like you're going to get a lot of no's. And that, you know, I say rejection is God's protection, right? Like, you know, those just aren't your people. Because if you really try hard to convince someone about your idea and you have to try really, really hard and say you actually, you know, you're successful in finally convincing them, if you've had to work so hard for them to see your light, then, okay, you've achieved the goal of bringing them in, but then are they really going to understand what you're doing? I feel like it's really important to find people that you resonate with, that understand and really can get excited and share your vision and add to that vision. Like, are you looking for someone just to give you, I don't know, money? Not all money's good money. Or, you know, support. Like, they really need to understand and align and get excited about whatever you're trying to do. And don't be discouraged, because there's a couple things people have told me over the years. It can't rain forever. And also, the no's are mathematical. Like, pretty soon you'll hit a yes, you know? You can't just keep getting no's. You'll find your people, and you'll know when you find them. I knew when I found Kathy that finally, you know, this idea I had, when she said palm slap to the forehead, like, I knew she understood. She got it right then.
Yeah.
That's why I'm in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Nobody in California believes I live here, but I love it.
And that's, you know, that's great advice, not just for leaders, but it's actually great advice for, you know, just in general for life.
It's life advice.
Yeah, find your people.
It's in life. You got to find your people.
From a single sponge on a film set to a product that changed an industry, Rianne Silva didn't wait for permission. She created the standard. As a Latina CEO, innovator, mother, and founder, she's proof that beauty and power aren't opposites, they're catalysts. Her story reminds us that products can become movements, dreams can become companies, and one bold idea can become a global brand. Rianne, thank you for trailblazing with purpose and showing the world what it looks like when creativity meets courage. And to everyone listening, don't just blend in, build something.